Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, your journey into personal growth. The splendor of any decision is after you've made it. All that remains to be seen are its consequences. My name is Ken Primus. I am your host. Here at Threads of Enlightenment, we talk about the principles of self-development and personal growth. By having conversation with people who have walked through their journey of personal growth. We believe that everyone at some point in their life will have to deal with one or more of these principles to have the privilege of focusing on their self-development as humans. These principles, when applied, can help you to become the best self possible. Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment. As we do here at Threads of Enlightenment, once we have our guests present, it is our pleasure that they come, first of all, because they're coming trusting us with opening up themselves to us so that you and I can better understand who they are, number one, and gain some insights from their journey so that you and I can become better human spirits on this planet so that we can change this world together. Ryan, I want to thank you for presenting and coming to Threads of Enlightenment. Tell everyone what you have created today.
Yeah, so great to be here, Ken. So I'm an author. I have a book coming out called The Half-Known Life, and it's all about really just living your best life and knowing yourself. And I've been a coach for many years. I've worked with the military. I've worked with psychologists, counselors, you know, executives. I specialize in transitions. So really people that maybe they're going through a big life change, like a retirement, and they thought, wow, I was this person for 30 years. Who am I now? And all the identity aspects that come with that, the identity questions. So coach for many years, and then I transitioned to do more of groups. And I did a lot of webinars for companies all over the world, really. I presented at a lot of different conferences. And so now an author, I do a lot of group stuff with the coaching. I help organizations improve their process by doing a lot of trainings. And for fun, I do a little bit of real estate on the side as well. So I do a little bit of everything there.
Well, that's a good thing. I think your plate sounds like it's full. I love to hear, and I always make this statement, Ryan, about people, about when someone becomes a creator, and the creator is an awakening of the self. We cannot stand just normal living. We're constantly creating and moving and looking at something different because we are a group of people that are excited about the unknown. We don't have a clue in many cases what it's going to be like, but we are excited about it. And I love to hear those things, those stories when you say we're doing this and doing that. It excites me. One of the things that we do here, Ryan, is we go back because that's a beautiful picture you have just painted for us to look at, that canvas. I can see you standing and before the corporate world doing all of this stuff. I could see you training in the middle. I can see it all, man. It's a beautiful picture. But I want to go back a little more when your parents, because I believe that once we land on this planet, this beautiful baby boy wrapped up in the blanket, and mom and dad brings him home, kissing him, and the program begins. Talk to us, Ryan, about that family unit. I know a lot of people call it home. I call it lab because we are put into a place where we are now being formed by thoughts and belief from the outside entities. Talk to me about your parents, your sibling, that type of situation in your home.
I had the best parents I could ever hope for. I was always loved, and they never had a a misstep in terms of, you know, just creating an environment where I could, you know, be who I was. I think the difficulty for me was for years I was, and my clients would never guess this, because I think as a coach, my job is to be this positive out. And you know, with my clients, I tend to be very positive, motivational type. But I was such an introvert growing up.
Yeah.
Still am. It's not like it went away. But I had just soul crushing anxiety, mm-hmm. and just such a heavy weight. Super quiet, but just the anxiety was just almost unbearable at times. And so, you know, as a coach, you know, some people are surprised to learn that I was so introverted, you know, and all the tests, like Myers-Briggs, for example, I'm like off the charts introversion. And I'm not shy. Mm-hmm. I know shyness and introversion are two different things, but introversion, I just recharge my batteries a little bit differently. And, but grew up just with this desire to please people, help people, and just always drawn to wellness, mm-hmm. And that kind of you know, I went into health and, you know, fitness and nutrition and coaching and so forth, and that was kind of the journey there.
So you from a young age, because I look at people that are introvert, those are folks, and I'm like that. We study things. One of the things that I love is human behavior, and I find that a lot of introverts, people that are different, they say, we study people's behavior from a young age, kind of putting pieces together as to why people act certain ways and stuff like that. The part of your anxiety, where did you think you began to input that that reel-to-reel, those thoughts about that specific thing? Is there something that you can remember that happened in your life that caused you to plug that tape in and just keep running it over and over when it comes to that specific thing, because you identified it early, dealing with anxiety? What did you think may have caused you to feed that that belief within yourself?
It was thinking that my value came from outside of me, mm-hmm. and I would constantly have to earn it. Mm-hmm. It was something that I had to do. I could see my value by looking at the reactions of others. So I always had to do something to be someone, to be seen.
Yeah, yeah.
I never felt seen because, you know, in large part because I was so introverted, I was so quiet. You know, I also never felt seen. And so I felt like I had to really be this certain person and have people like me, essentially, mm-hmm. so I could feel like I was a complete person. And I think just having that pain and having just some horrible experiences with, you know, people around school, for example, after a while, things started to really change for me when I learned that if you have anxiety, if you're super quiet, if you really struggle in those areas, the minute that you make it okay, the minute that you own it, mm-hmm. a lot of that anxiety dissipates to some degree. So I think, you know, I've done talks in front of hundreds and, you know, of people in big conference rooms. Uh-huh. I've done, you know, talks all over the world. I've done, you know, I've met with executives before and all that. The minute that you own it and say, you know what, I like being an introvert. Mm-hmm. I like it. And the minute you love that aspect of yourself as treat yourself as if you're someone to be loved, mm-hmm. and as if, why is that a bad thing to be an introvert? Yes. It's not. I made it bad as a kid. Mm-hmm. I made it.
Yeah.
As that was someone that I didn't want to be, because I felt like there was something wrong with that. And there's not a thing wrong with it. And I think once you love it, not just accept it, but love it, then, you know, that fear part of you sort of goes away.
I think it takes away the power from it. And that's one of the beginning aspects of loving the individual self. Many of us don't understand that that is probably one of the most important journey anyone can ever embark upon, because when you love yourself, you will love your children deeper, you will love your mate deeper, you will love everyone around you deeper, because you have faced the dragon, as they say. And the dragon is basically yourself. You've looked at yourself and see the darkness and fell in love with it. And it is, I think, Ryan, a lot of us are afraid to do that because we are seeking perfection and not understanding that perfection can be an enemy. But loving the self as the self is, and learning to utilize tools to improve the outcome of your thought life and to govern your behavior and all those things, that stuff is beautiful but painful. And I think a lot of people in our society, Ryan, is afraid to go there to learn how to engage with self. That's why we engage with TV. We are looking at the cell phone 24 hours a day. It beep. I mean, we just, our society is designed to medicate us and not push us towards an engagement with the self. It's fascinating, man, to watch what we do, to afraid to get there. It's really painful to even entertain. But here you are. How old were you, Ryan, when you began to have that conversation with yourself as to, hey, let me change the perspective by which I see this particular aspect of me? And once you change that perspective of you, took away the power. How old were you when you started that, when you started recognizing it?
Well, I saw it sort of the self-development path, because I thought there might be another way. I was always into personal development. I mean, I would watch videos and do workbooks and attend conferences. Mm-hmm. I went to Mexico once for this personal development conference. Mm-hmm. And I was, I think, 23. So I really was drawn to it, I would say, yeah, about 21, 22, I think, mm-hmm. When I realized there's another way here. But I think it really took off when I was, I would say, you know, 28, 29, mm-hmm. and I began really coaching. One thing I do is I track patterns, and I see, you know, and I've done thousands and thousands of sessions. And when you see what people are going through, it's you look at yourself differently too. Mm-hmm. It changes you. And I was surprised initially, you know, at the type of clients I had. You know, I'd have, like I said, you know, psychologists as clients. And mm-hmm. I thought everybody was supposed to have this all figured out. I thought I was the only one who was like, you know, and I realized it's not about how smart you are. It's not about it. We all have limitations when it comes to seeing ourselves.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right. I mean, we're in a society where there are so many distractions. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I ask clients a lot is, you know, what are you distracting yourself from? Because it's a lot of things around us create numbness, mm-hmm. and keep us sort of in this feeling of being stuck. And, you know, the ability to really see patterns with clients and out of thousands of clients to, you know, everybody comes to me with a story.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that they think their story is really unique to them. And usually the story is, I'm stressed. Yes. I'm super busy. I don't have time for my goals.
Yeah.
I'm stuck, you know, that kind of thing. They think it's unique to them, but I just heard the same thing from like 5,000 other people. You know? And I thought, wow, something is really broken here. You're exactly right. Something is really broken in the something is behind this.
Yeah.
That's not being addressed.
Yeah. I think the programming, all of those things that they're simply tools. I mean, a TV is a tool. A phone is a tool. How you utilize the tool. Hey, man, drugs is good, you know, but if you misuse drugs, it'll kill you, you know. So it's a matter of understanding the tool that is there before you. You can use TV to to and your phone to become the best possible you on this planet. But then most people use it to numb themselves, because I still think it's one of the programmings that is that we are familiar with, and we just continue that journey. So here you are, Ryan, you're recognizing patterns, and I love this study, and you talk about patterns and how we take these thoughts, and thoughts come into us, and we take these patterns with replaying these thoughts that are growing, we feed it, and it becomes monsters that we have to sit down with to overcome as we become aware of what's happening in our life. You mentioned anxiety, and I want people to understand that how you overcame this was simply by switching the your perspective on these things. And a lot of them, Ryan, is that's the beginning of it. Once you change that, you kind of strip away the power that is behind that those thoughts. And as you said, you own it. Once you own it, it now, and you recognize that, okay, this is a part of me. It's not something I should fight. Okay, how can I work with this? How can I use this to navigate through life? Talk to me about some of those patterns other than the anxiety piece that as you dealt with your clients, did you start to recognize, because you said you recognized that it changed you some of the things. What were some of those patterns as you began to educate your clients? Did you notice within yourself and you're like, wait a minute, I need to work on this?
Well, and first I think, me almost appreciating the introversion that I have really helped me in many ways, because it allowed me to be, it's exactly what allowed me to be more introspective and sort of, I was always sort of reflective, I guess, and really enjoyed reflecting. And it helped me with clients too.
Yeah.
And what I learned with clients in terms of patterns is that, and you talk about a lot of the programming that we have, and everyone, if you ask someone who they are, what they do is they give you a resume.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing with someone who specializes in transitions like I do, everyone is busy. People think their busyness is unique to them.
Yeah.
They'll come to you and they'll have these life goals that have been on the back burner, and they'll make some life changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, tomorrow maybe, because today they have all these things they have to do on this to-do list that it never ends, mm-hmm. ever. And once they get through it though, they'll have plenty of time for the goals.
Yeah.
But it never ends. And they think they are this role. So I'll give you an example. Working with the military, which I have done for a long time, you retire, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've thought themselves as this sergeant, mm-hmm. for many years.
Yeah.
And now suddenly they're not a sergeant anymore. So who am I now? And it's really, well, you're still you.
Mm-hmm.
You're still you, I'm pretty sure. There was a you before the military, mm-hmm. and there will be a you after the military.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure your family, they don't call you sergeant, right?
Yeah.
They don't call you sergeant. So you're still you, and everything in your life, whether it's anything on your resume, or, your parent, a sibling, a spouse, you're a salesperson, they're all just roles.
Yes.
And none of it is who you actually are.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think the fact that there are roles out there makes people transactional, not interactional.
Yeah.
Like if I go to a restaurant and interact with a server, they're not a person, they're a server, right?
Yeah.
And so, or I go to the gas station and there's the cashier there, they're not a person, they're a cashier in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all just a series of roles and I think it makes people transactional. So I think those are the patterns that I'm seeing, that people are sort of lost in this busyness and think that their fulfillment is this role that will complete them.
Yeah.
And it's they don't realize that's untrue mm-hmm. until they're on their deathbed, or maybe something like a trauma, for example, pulls them into the moment where they can, it stops the busyness and they can go, whoa.
Yeah.
And really look at their lives, you know?
I think that's, it can be a blessing if you allow it to be that trauma, whatever it is, divorce, sicknesses and disease, all of the other things that we have a litany of them that come. And I think if we look at it as an opportunity to have a conversation with ourselves, we can embark on a beautiful journey that I know some biggest businesses start out of a trauma of losing work, because that person began to look at that work, their role, and as within that, and go, wait a minute, that's not what I really want to do. This is what I want to do. And they look within themselves, and from that conversation comes a job or a profession, or it comes out of them. Something is really not a job. It's who they are and who they identify with. And from that conversation with themselves, they're able to hire hundreds of people, you know? So it would have never happened had that opportunity came within that form. It usually comes in that form because we don't pay attention to any other form. And it's just, I've never encountered anyone that when everything is nice and everything is rosy, decide to say, oh, let me just take my life and turn it all over the place. But it always comes in this form, because I believe, Ryan, that that's where the creator part of us is seen. The creator part of us is not seen when everything is doing good. And people that listen to my podcast know that my background is Christianity, and it was darkness when God showed up. And then he said, wait a minute, this is not what I want. And he began to do and call those things into what he wants. And that's what happens to us. And I tell people to locate this particular aspect of themselves, Ryan. I tell them, find your statement of faith. What is it that you are wanting in and from your situation? God, the creator, showed up and he wanted light. He wanted water. And he began to call those things that he wanted into being. A business put together their vision statement. It is that statement that guides that company. So I always tell people, you need to find that, because it is the most important piece that you're going to need. When it's dark, when it gets hard, you're going to make something that says, and it has to be big, that vision statement or whatever, that statement of faith, make it big, man. Why not? And it will guide you in the dark times. And I love what you said, because I've never looked at it that way, Ryan, but there's some tremendous insight into that. And trust me, I'm going to talk to you about how I love, I'm a collector. I love when you said about us being transitional, man. It kind of popped a couple of things into me to see a deeper aspect of human behavior, including myself, aspects of myself with this transitional piece. That's some powerful stuff, bro.
Yeah. And I you talk about mission statements too. I love that. You know, for me, it's about living life fully explored as this person.
Yeah.
You know, everyone has this, they put themselves in a box, you know, in a category, in a label. And I think our purpose is largely to explore the entirety of our lives, or learn what that means, learn who we are, learn what that means. And you also made another point about, you know, so the different roles out there. And I've worked with, you know, some people love their jobs and they think that job is part of their purpose.
Yeah.
Let's say I've met a lot of nurses who love their job.
Yeah, they have something helping else, people. Aren't they, man?
Yes, they are, especially now, right? And I appreciate them so much. So they, you know, a lot of nurses think, okay, well, that's my purpose and that's who I am. But I would challenge that to say, perhaps you are not a nurse. Mm-hmm. A nurse is a label, a nurse is a role. You are what a nurse does.
Yes.
That is an extension of you. So you're not really a nurse either. You're just someone, and this is why I love nurses, because there's a part of them that is just like wants to help.
Compassionate, man. They are.
Yes,
that's compassion. That's the aspect of them that I've seen, because I came out of that, the healthcare industry per se. And these people, there's a group that they are full of compassion. And because they are full of compassion, they are able to operate at a level that I would look at people and I'd be like, there's no way. There's no way. Because I had a family of nurses, my mom, my sisters, and tons of people I know that.
Yeah, my mother as well.
Yeah, they're something else. And that is, I think that's more so who they are. The world or society, the label that we can figure out or the profession that we can put on it is that of a nurse, the title. But a nurse is deeper, as we said, is more compassionate. They're driven from a different space than, and I came out of a skilled nursing facility, and I used to tell people that that industry right there will let me know what type of nurse I am dealing with. Am I dealing with one who's in it for the money, or am I dealing with one who's in it for something different, that compassionate piece? And it's easy to spot them. Situation. So I love that aspect. I've never looked at some things like that. I'm going to have to investigate about that. Here you go. And I know it's a natural progression from dealing with your clients and stuff like that, that you went into the book. How did that come about? Because I know it's probably, there's always a conversation that ignites that. And how was that conversation, and what was the circumstances that caused that to come about?
Well, I think this sort of perspective, I did think along these lines. I've always sort of been someone who has sought out, I guess, who some kind of a purpose or some way to explain that, because I never felt like I was any type of a role. I never felt like that. I never felt like I was this title. And like when we talk about nurses, like what happens when they're not a nurse anymore?
Yeah.
Well, I would say they're still the same compassionate yep. person that they were, and they can help people
yeah.
just like they did. Mm-hmm. They're still that person. So we need to separate from these little boxes that we put ourselves yeah. in, because the boxes are very, very temporary.
Yeah. The roles, I'm telling you that
exactly.
You just exactly. changed my life with something in there. I've never looked at it, certain things like that. So I appreciate this, man.
And if you're on a deserted island and you're who are you then? Are you a lawyer or a nurse? Or no, you're a person who is there, who is for once, you are just there mm-hmm. as a person, present.
Yeah.
And everything else fell away because it's quiet and you're not surrounded with all this noise that we're constantly surrounded, all the distractions. And I think for me, when I work with people, and I saw this in myself as well, is, and we talked about earlier, once we are sort of pulled into the moment and we really take a hard look at, you know, who am I? Is the role important? And I think for me, I was a coach and I had, I had a couple cardiac arrests, and that really, it was totally sudden. You know, I had no family history, no signs really. And I've been in wellness pretty much my entire life.
Yeah.
So, I'm just walking along and I just, just drop dead basically. And fortunately I received CPR and I had someone there and was obviously revived. And then it happened again the following day. But it was such a strange time for many reasons. But I was a new coach with a new contract. Mm-hmm. And I was back at work 5 days later because I had no time off or anything. Yes. So I'm in the ICU one day and they couldn't figure out what was wrong.
Yeah.
So everyone always asks me, what was wrong, and no one can figure it out. I've seen world-renowned specialists. Yeah. The closest I can come is I've got some wiring problems with nothing wrong with the heart, actually. Yeah. But when you don't know, that's even scarier because you realize how precious life is and how quickly, you know, I was a healthy guy, young guy, right? And I was 30 and fitness, and I worked out that day and eat well and non-smoker and so forth and so on. And then, boom, everything changes. And you realize, you know, everyone thinks things can't happen to them until they do. Yeah. And now suddenly I have a pacemaker and I'm in the ICU. I got a pacemaker after that occurred, just as a safety net.
Yeah.
And then 5 days later, I'm back at work. And things really started to change back at work because I am literally in virtual sessions and I'm connected to all these wires. My wound is still fresh, you know, and I just essentially died 5 days earlier. And I said goodbye to everyone because, you know, by, after the second cardiac arrest and the doctors are all scratching their heads, you're kind of like, well, I guess that's it for me. And I'm heading out. And, you know, to say I was scared, it's not even that. It's the complete, and I knew it was going to happen about a few seconds prior. I could feel the darkness come in, and I look at the person next to me, right before I lose consciousness. And I just say, yeah, I'm going to go down. I'm going to go down now. Cause I knew I was going to lose consciousness. Yeah. And going back into sessions, you know, I was extremely dizzy. I had very limited amount of energy. And problems, listening to people's problems sounded completely different. Mm. Completely different.
I was going to ask you, how did it affect you, man, coming out of that situation, having that lifestyle per se as what people tell us how we should be living, this healthy thing. And, you know, the perception is if we do that, we're going to live this pretty long life. And so here you are, bam, bam. How did that, and how did it, what happened to the mentality towards life? You mentioned some of it, listening to people you're about to talk about it. How did that change your perspective in this whole thing that we call life?
This is a very strange comparison. I look at life like poker in a way. Hmm. In other words, the cost of a thing is the amount of life you exchange for it.
Yeah.
So with everything that you do in your life, you are saying, I am betting or I'm wagering this amount of chips.
Yeah.
And that's how much it's worth to me. Mm-hmm. So the amount of time you're on social media, the amount of time you're involved in a work drama, the amount of time you're in this, you are saying that whatever you do, that is worth the cost in time. That is worth that cost because you have a very limited cost and people do not, or very limited time. And people do not realize that mostly until they're pulled into the moment like I was.
Yeah.
And so I remember one lady specifically, it was like a couple of days after I got back. And she was like, I remember sitting there in the chair and she couldn't see me. It was over like a telephonic connection on the phone. And she was telling me about a few reasons why she couldn't progress towards her goals. She had several goals she was working on, and she was super busy. She had a couple kids and super, super nice lady, but very lost in her daily life. And I remember thinking, you know, as I'm listening to this endless list of reasons why she couldn't move forward with her like goals or whatever, why she didn't do what she said she was going to do, I thought, you know, I am just trying to stay conscious right now. You know, I was so dizzy. I was like, my goal today is to like be vertical and that's it. And so, and I've been dizzy. I am dizzy 24/7 and I've been dizzy for about 12 years. And, you know, I can manage the triggers and I've seen all kinds of specialists and all that, but I am managing that. But what that event made me do as a must, I have to do this, is I have to manage my energy in a way that is more steadfast. I have more boundaries than most people.
Yeah.
When I need sleep, I take it. When I self-care, I don't tend to engage in these long, drama things. I don't get on social media for hours every day. I am constantly living in that way. And this is how it's changed me, really, is because I have to. If I don't do those things, then I feel really, really sick. Like I'm going to pass out again and experience that again. So it's very, very real. But, I think problems seem different. Time seems different. And with everything that I do and say, I think of it in terms of, what's the cost of that in terms of my energy, my time, and is it worth that?
Yeah, I think it's a wise way to live, though, Ryan. I think if we all lived in that space, I think we would be more of a productive individual. But even deeper than that, I think we would be more aware of our surroundings, our breathing, our purpose. I think it changes everything. Jesus made a statement. He said, sufficient is the problems of today, your situations today. He's trying to tell people to live in the present, don't worry about tomorrow as far as, I understand about goals, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how to manage your 24 hours that has been given to you as far as your time. As you mentioned, that your body is, we are energy. They can quantify it when we die. They know how much leave and so forth. So how we expend that in the day is what determines how exhausted we get, how we perform at night and sleep and all of those type things. And do you want to spend it in back and forth, wasting of energy with people with nonsense? I can't do it. I just can't do it. It's, as you mentioned, it's too expensive. I don't go on social media that much at all. I just don't have the energy to dispense or expend out, because time becomes a commodity that is very expensive, especially as when you are living under like a situation like yours. The other, in my case, I'm getting old, man. I'm 60, so I can't engage. I know that's young. I can't engage in some of the things, the behavior, the mentality of some of the things. But I love your journey, man, because I'm learning a lot from it. I want to tell you that. So here we are, Ryan. You're getting all of these things. You put together the book. It's the process by which you talk about your two interruptions that you had that has caused you to now look at the value of a minute, of an hour, of a day. Talk to me now as to, here is this woman. She came and she lacked the understanding of the value. How do you translate that now to some of your client? Because it is understanding and operating within that value that produces tremendous outcome at a rate that it would just incredible how things happen when you live with the focus that you are doing on a daily basis. How do you now translate that into someone like your client that was telling you all that wonderful stuff as to why she couldn't do anything?
I don't feed it. And I think when in life, when we get into these places where we're so lost in busyness and sort of distracted by all these things, we tend to, since we're all that, a lot of people are that way, when they interact with each other, it's this long series of reactivity where one person's reacting, then that person's reacting, and then, oh, the drama at work, and what did she say to you? Oh my God, I can't believe it. And it's like this never ending ping pong match. And I think with clients, you can never convince anyone of anything. I've learned they have to choose it. And I don't have a personal need for them to be any particular place. That's their journey. So the best thing that I can do is just be there and be really there with them. And I don't feed any of those things. And I, my goal is to be, I guess I would call it a conduit for their own exploring.
Yeah.
And they can take it as far as they want to. You know, my job is to ask certain questions and to sort of help them make that journey and of introspection, sort of, you know, use those questions and sort of explore within themselves.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing I can do or action for them, but I can be there, and I can be there in a way that's interactional and not transactional.
Yeah.
And I think if, like you and others who are creative and think this way, I think what we can do is we can reflect that with people and just be there with that. And the, I guess the idea is that they see that, or they, it's sort of a catalyst for them.
Yeah. There's a statement that Jesus made that freaked me out, because I love studying deepness about things, and especially when people make certain, you know, declaration like yours. Really, going, I think that's a profound statement of what you did and said. Jesus makes a statement, rhymes, "Those that have ears, let them hear." And people would read and run over that, like, you know, whatever. But for me, it kind of made me stop, because I started investigating that and looking at it from the lens that I was looking at. And I realized that there was, within that statement, there was a responsibility for the hearer. And because he said, those who have ears, let them hear. So he's saying what he's saying. But the hearer also has a responsibility to be ready to hear. Some people are listening, but they're not hearing. And so there's a difference. And the responsibility means then that that person must have a desire to hear something, or want to hear something different, because there's a crowd of people that he's obviously talking to. And to make that statement, that then narrows down the amount of people that that message or whatever he's talking about is for. And so it kind of floored me one day, because I started to really walk into that and realize that not every time you have, not every, some people just not going to hear it, man. Some people are not ready for it. And I see that example sometimes with my children. I remember when they were young boys, I would try to tell them to this. And to one day I'd see someone comes, a stranger comes out of nowhere, says the same thing that I've been trying to tell them from their life, from the time they were born until that day that that person said it. And at that day, when that person said it, it to them is this newness of things. And that's the type of stuff I'm talking about, because they were ready then. They weren't ready with me, you know. I was dad yabbling and you know, doing the noise. But when someone else came with that information, it opened up their receptive aspect of them, and they were ready for it. So those who have ears, let them hear. And some people, I tell them, we can't baby a lot of people. We just have to say what we have to say. And it's on them to receive it. We can only be present with them, to walk with them and hold their hands and be empathetic and all the different things that we learn as we begin to love ourselves. And we can then do the same for them, and to love them and to hold that space for them. And I think the reason why we go through a lot of the things that we go through in life is so that we can then go to those people that are going through some of those things, Ryan, because the power that comes out of your words, the conviction that comes out of your words, carry a tremendous amount of power, more so than someone who just hanging around reading about it. But your experience have made it personal, and you are then able to carry with it a particular force that is able to, when it lodges into that person, it's able to as the young kids use today, level them up, you know, so that they can stand up and be counted, as they say, in the group of people who are awakening. This has been a tremendous conversation for me. I think I'm learning a lot more than all these listeners that are going to be listening to this stuff. And I absolutely I'm glad that you came because, like I said, I am personally learning a lot. Everyone that has been listening to this conversation between Ryan and I, it is my hope, as I said, the conversation is not for everyone, but those who are ready, it is my hope that that seed is planted in from Ryan, and it is my hope and my desire that you get in touch with this young man and partner with him by buying his books. And as you know how I feel about that, that when you purchase someone's books, you're having a private conversation with them, a one-on-one conversation. He's talking to you directly, and you guys are having this exchange, and you are getting insights uninterrupted. I know he mentioned other things that he does by group, and all of these things. Just get in touch with him. I'm going to give you guys everything he got, because he has said something to me that has opened up an aspect in my belief system that I'm going to investigate, and I hope the same has happened to you guys. Ryan, thank you for dropping by at Threads of Enlightenment. This has been something else.
The pleasure was mine. I loved it. It was great.
Everyone who's listening to this broadcast, we hope to continually help you to learn how to embrace moments of darkness, because it is in the darkness that we learn how to develop and use our abilities to truly see those parts of ourselves, often invisible to us, in the light. It becomes your responsibility to navigate through all of your trials to find out who you truly are and begin your journey to loving yourself, which is possibly one of the most difficult things you will ever do in your life. To love yourself and to find the real you, but always remember to enjoy the journey. Thank you for coming by. Please subscribe, and if you can support us financially, we deeply appreciate it. You can do this by hitting the heart button. Until next time, invite your family, friends, neighbors, anyone that you can. You can hear us on Buzzsprout, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Overcast, and many more.